guys. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper.
This is Joe Bob Briggs.
This is Jeffrey Combs.
Hey, this is Scotty in from Anthrax.
Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau.
Hi, this is Doc Bradley. You're listening to Quality Time.
You're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Broadcast.
And you're listening to Quality Time.
Quality Time Podcast.
I'm saying this under duress.
You better keep listening or I will tear your soul apart.
Every time I have sex with like a strange woman or like an animal, I just drink bleach.
Oh, okay. How's that worked out?
I usually like vomit for days, and after a couple weeks, there's not as much bleeding.
Oh, I should probably, you know what? That's a good point, Jeremy. I should probably stop funneling it into my butthole.
Hey,
whatever keeps that butthole looking nice and sweet.
Hey, don't you change for us, okay? That's the last thing I want.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Without further ado, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and I'm joined by my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. Woodworth. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
I've changed today.
Wait a minute. You've changed today. How have you changed?
Well, you can still call me Jeremy, but I'm changing my name to Jeremy Oblivion.
Oh, Jeremy Oblivion. Okay.
Since I'm always seen on television from now on.
Okay, yeah, now you're only on screens. Yeah, I haven't seen Jeremy in so long, or Ashley. Maybe you guys only do exist in a TV-type world.
That's right, the Videodrome is real.
Yes, I can't wait to get into the Videodrome shortly. And we're also joined by the very lovely, the very talented Miss Ashley Pontius. Ashley, how are you?
I'm good, Daddy.
That's great. How are things? Your dog's sitting right now, no?
I am. Yeah, it's good right now. One of them is outside searching for loose poo, so that's fun. And the other one is rolling in cat piss, so I'm doing a good job.
Hell yeah, that's a good dog owner right there. I'd pay you almost nothing to do that. Hell yeah.
Oh yeah, I am so good at this. They ate a book last night. Like, I'm doing great.
Jeremy, that's actually how Jeremy reads. He eats books. That's how he absorbs knowledge, much like how Chuck Norris would.
I'm not very good at reading.
Wait, both the Woodwards? reading? Okay.
We're both.
When I say I read a book a year, I actually just eat the book.
Good fiber.
Yeah, every time Jeremy takes a shit, that's what he reads, but it's actually he's eaten 10 pages of like a Stephen King novel. So right now all he has is the Knockers part of Tommy Knockers left.
But when it comes to like audiobooks, I read like four audiobooks a year.
Oh, okay. That's good.
That's kind of like reading.
It is. It's like reading for morons. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I like when they're acted out by like like Carrot Top. So.
Oh, a good Carrot Top reading really does hit the spot, I will admit.
His version of War and Peace is pretty rocking.
I like that. What would Carrot Top's little prop for that be? I like that you picked a visual prop comic to do all of your audiobook reading. That is pretty funny. You know, he just sits there and explains. He's like, "This is War and Peace," and if you could see me right now, there would be a peace sign with the word "war" attached to it. I'm Carrot Top. Let me pick out the next one. All right, I look scary.
It's really zany. Also, his version of Mein Kampf is pretty good too.
Mein Kampf.
Where he acts out the Holocaust, so.
God damn it.
Props.
That is good shit. That is good shit. Guys, let me tell you about one thing before we get into tonight's movie, which is Videodrome. I'm very excited to go over this, but I went to a show last night, and what I'm about to tell you, I'm going to say for the guy who booked me, I love you, John Yeager. Okay. John Yeager booked me for this show. Last minute, I get a call Friday evening saying, hey, what are you doing Saturday? I was just like, as a matter of fact, my schedule's open. So he goes, can I ask
a question?
Yeah.
Is he really related to Chuck Yeager?
Yes, I was going to get to that. Thanks for burying the lead. So John calls me up and he says, hey, can you do this show? It's at a wine tasting. He's a sommelier, right? So he's doing a wine tasting for a private party where I am to do comedy at. I show up to this place. It's in Pasadena, Maryland, okay? There's about 10 women there, okay? All between the ages of like 30 and 50, okay?
No.
Not my target demographic right away. I'm wearing a t-shirt that says for the movie Mandy that has an axe on it, and it's a horror bit. It looks very metal. I'm wearing a Metallica sweater, denim from head to toe because it's chilly outside, and I've showed up at a wine tasting, okay? That's where your boy was plopped into last night, right?
Real quick, Eric, I know they normally have buckets for when they spit out the wine, but did they have to have more buckets for the lady to wring out their panties?
Yeah.
I'm gonna guess that all the women are drinking the 19 Crimes wine.
Yes, 19 Crimes is being drank. So John goes ahead because he has got, you know, he's a wine distributor. He's doing his tasting. I'm just kind of meandering about the house, trying not to get COVID-19, and it is what is certainly a super spreader event. And I'm moving around. It finally gets, John goes, and I was like, so how you want to do this? I was just like, okay. I mean, I guess, you know, you open up, he's like, cool, I'm going to do five up front and then you do it. Yeah. Try to guess how loud the PA we were using was. Give it a guess. Anything at all.
I said barely.
Barely. Like very soft, right?
I was going to say non-existent.
Well, Ashley, you'd be correct. There was no PA. So there's no microphone or anything. I am performing in a living room, kitchen area, and this is where I'm at. And it is a house. And to give you an idea of the demographics that make it up, I said there's 10 women, okay? I think 4 of them actually spoke English, okay? I'm being honest with you. 4 people actually spoke English out of this lot of them. And there was 4 of them were Asians. The rest of them were all white women from either Poland or Eastern Europe. I shit you not. And they don't... I'm watching John, who says he's going to do 5 minutes, do a solid 35-minute set to open up. And none of it's doing... All of it's going bad. There's not one part where he's crushing it, right? There's not... At one part, he makes a joke where he says... he's just like, you know, it's a masturbation joke. He's like, you know, because I didn't want to end up with hairy palms. And then this Polish lady goes, what does hairy palm mean? What does hairy palm? Like... And I am... So every joke that John's making... And they understand no colloquialisms or slang or anything. Everything is taken at literal face value. And they're like, what does Harry Paul mean? I'm crying in the corner. I'm watching him going. And mostly their cries of tears, because I'm going to have to go up there soon and do the same thing for the same amount of time. We could have been, if he had done 5, I would have got to at least struggle earlier, right? So I'm watching this all go down. And
did the joke where he, like, you know, does his slant eyes and just pretends to talk like Chinese go over well?
It's like, oh, me so sorry. Yes. He did his, I'm Michael Shannon. Look at me. I'm famous actor. Look at me. I am this is my Joel Grey impersonation. You ever see Remo Williams? Or as he likes to call it, Limo Williams. So... Which is very funny that he can call him Remo, but he doesn't call him Limo Williams. Anyway, shout out to
Does it go both ways with the L and the R? Like, both are pronounced wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I watched John struggle for a good, trying to get these cats. It's also a birthday party for 2 of the women there. So they don't speak English. There's 2 people, there's 3 people there that do speak English that are actually laughing at jokes. Nobody else gives a fuck, right? Eric, take the stage. And I'm like, here we go. boom, I just start going on and on. I was like, they're not listening. They're having their own conversations. I don't know why I'm here. A lot of it was just questioning, why am I here? I don't belong here. I'm performing in front of your husband's military pictures. I feel like he's going to show up and I'm going to get murdered because he's going to think you ordered the worst strippers in the whole world right now. This is not a place I should be right now. So at one part, this older lady is sitting there talking because they're all right next to me and they're just having their wonderful side conversation. And so I tried, I'm like, tell me about this. What are you guys talking about? And she's like, no. Like this, you go on. And I'm like, come on, just say, you know, we're at a party. We're having fun. You guys don't give a shit what I'm talking about. What you guys got going on? And she was just like, okay, well, I have a twin sister, and my twin sister, as you know, and she goes, Suki, I know you love my twin sister, but I must tell you this story. Today, my son, who's 12 years old, went to my sister's twin sister's house, and she beat him up and punched him. and I know you love my sister, but you must know the truth like that. And I'm like, and the floor is yours. I don't want to talk about it. I was like, wait a minute, you need to talk about your son getting it. He's 12 years old. He got beat up by a woman. Let's talk about this. Let's do it. Your son got beat up by an elderly woman. She's not happy with me. Other people are laughing. I was just like, well, as is Polish tradition, in the next year, he can rematch her for 13 for the rights of her house. We know that is accurate. And that,
oh my God.
Hey, by the way, only person that's laughing now is John Yeager. He's uncomfortable. I'm losing him wine sales as we speak, right? So John thinking he's gonna help
wait, this is all about wine sales?
Yes. So he's doing this as all this. He's trying to sell wine. I'm just the comedic act that's doing
what?
After the wine tasting.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So, he was pimping Eric out for wine sales.
So
did you get paid in wine?
Partially. There was partial
wine.
Oh,
my gosh.
So I did get some wine out of it, but I also got money. So both of those things were fine. So as I'm going through this, right, John is just like, all right, well, he's bombing like I did, so here you go. And he brings up my guitar. And I'm like, all right, here's some good old tunes. By the way, I sing fucking horrible songs, not songs for 30-year-old middle-aged women. None of these are going to work. So I open up with Judy. I pop a string halfway through the song. So now I've got...
Oh, my gosh.
I'm strumming, and it's going, bink, bink, bink. They think I'm fucking horrible at music on top of everything. This is not a good show. I'm cursing. I'm angry now. Now I'm bombing and things, and my equipment's failing at the same time, right? And so I'm like, I get a little frustrated. I finally get to the end of that. They get some chuckles out of them. They're laughing, right? I'm like... But now they're right back to just being loud and stuff like that. I try to go into another song, and I'm a little bit flustered. I can't remember how it starts, and I'm joking around, and I was just like, and I feel like I've completely lost them. If at any time I did have them, they're gone. I have none of their attention. This one bitch whose birthday it is, she just pipes up every 2 seconds. Let me tell you about this. I was like, shut up. I told her to shut up 3 times. They laughed the first couple times. Now they think I'm just evil that I'm telling the owner of the house to shut the fuck up multiple times, right? So there's just no win here. I look dead into John's eyes, and I'm like, well, I guess this is going to happen. And I hop right in and start singing my brother the abortion song, and there is not a laugh. There's not a laugh. There's not a sneer. I could see John losing money. I could see wine sales being erased from little sheets as I'm doing this. And I am uncontrollably laughing because I was like, this is the story I wanted to leave with now. Now you get this. That was my bombing there last night. They were very nice to me after the show. They were like, "Oh, we'll have you back." And I looked at her, "Why? Why would you ever do that?" And they kept offering me cake because there was a birthday song afterwards. They were like, "Here, you take cake." I was like, "Oh, that's great." And I took another plate. He was like, "Here, we'll put another plate." I was like this. I was like, "I hate cake. Thank you. You know what? I'll save it for later." And I took the cake that was and put the plate over top of it, two paper plates, so they were sandwiched in there. And I folded it like an envelope and then stuck it in my pocket. And I was like, as a joke, right? They looked at me and I was like, man, Americans are weird, right? They just thought that was like how it, they thought that's how Nothing I'm doing is working. Anything bizarre, it's completely lost to them. They're like, man, this guy Eric is, I guess this is how Americans are, because he's a fucking weirdo.
You were the
weirdo.
Borat of that show.
Yes, I was. I was Borat. I was Borat in that situation. Uh-oh. So that was,
I was gonna say Bruno.
Yes. I'm not that straight. Come on.
Oh, well, I'm sorry that happened, you know, Eric. I think two things. One, it's good that you were able to escape, because it sounds like they wanted to recreate the movie Society and feed off of you. And two, I want you to know that I love your music. And in fact, I have been fingered several times to my brother the abortion.
So aww, you're doing something. Thank you so nice. Much. I don't think you've ever actually heard that song, Ashley.
No, I have. I have.
You have? Oh, okay. Yeah.
I've done shows with you. Like,
I also don't do it very often anymore. I've done it lots before we met.
I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure you did it at, sorry, that's the door. I'm pretty sure you did it at the Church of Satire live show that we did.
Yeah, that's probably legit. Yeah, that would be a place I would do it. I generally only do that song. I generally only do that song by request now. For the most part,
that's
generally
fair. I want it at my wedding, Eric.
It stays on. This song stays on while I get the abortion. So that was my fun
room.
Times. Is it time for a little bit of Honest Ash though? Oh, and it's about that time again for another segment of Honest Ash, and here's Ashley Pontius.
Oh, hello, listeners. I wanted to tell you that once on the way to a show, I had to pee so bad and it was so late and nothing was open that I had to pull off on the side of the road and pee in the darkness. But little did I know that my stance was terrible and I pissed all over my feet. And then I had to go to a show covered in my own piss. And then I robbed a heckler that night. This has been Honest Ash.
Join us next week again for another exciting episode of Honest Ash. Wow, Ashley, nice. So you did a show with pee pants. That's cool. Solid.
It was terrible. I went from another show to the next show. I had multiple shows in a night and it was so late that nothing was open and I was crying. I had to pee so bad. So I pull over and I was wearing flip-flops and my stance was real bad because, you know, girls don't stand to pee and it's hard to squat without a toilet. And I was like, I just got to not pee on my pants. That was my thought. But the way I was angled, I pissed all over my feet and my flip-flops. And I was like, well, at least it's warm. And then I got to the show and this guy at this nasty bar was heckling me and I read him for filth. And then afterwards he tried to apologize and I made him buy everybody drinks. And then I said, what's in your wallet? And he was like, what? I was like, how much you got in your wallet? He's like, $20. And I was like, hand it over. And I took his money and I was like, that's what you get for ruining my show.
Hell yeah. Well, look, I mean, if I pissed my pants, I'd do it for $20 a day. That would work for me. We're a piss-based economy now.
I'm just glad you didn't poo your pants.
I did. I did that earlier this week. I didn't tell you. I didn't think I shared this with Jeremy. I shared it with you, Ash, because you have the gastrointestinal problems of a 90-year-old woman sometimes. But I that seemed like it hurt, and I'm sorry. They're bits.
It's fine. I'm not upset.
You document your shits on this show, but I've started a new...
Better. We haven't talked about that. But.
Yes, you are healed, though. That is good. Congratulations, because now all of it is apparently on me.
Pray Satan.
I started a new diet that is, you know, it's a low carb type thing, but it really starts next week. I was just starting to get used to the foods and stuff because it's hard to get yourself into it. It's nice when you have like a week where I'm like, I'm going to cheat on this diet a little bit, but start to get used to it, right? So
right.
I started that this week and I bought a giant tub from Costco of cashews. It's just nicely salted cashews. And I kind of went to town on them, where that was like the only thing I ate during the day for 2 days. Flash forward to day three of this, and I'm at work, and I go to take a number two, my morning constitutional. I stand up and I look into the shitter, and there is orange oil spots all over in the water. And I mean oil as in oil doesn't mix with water. It's floated to the top. It's a clear, bright Balmer Orioles orange color, and just speckled everywhere in the sizes of like a dime all the way down to like a googly eye size, right? So like the just speckled. It looked like I shit a lava lamp. Okay. That's the best way to describe it. And wiping, it was super oily and not like diarrhea. Like it felt like my asshole was lubed. It felt very nice, actually. It was pleasant.
Kind of like you blew your nose.
Yeah, no, but just slidey, like, yep, like real I slick. Just, yeah, like if you wanted to shove an 18-inch piece of plastic up in me, it would have fucking went in there like you were throwing it into a pool. So
yeah, you definitely have a bussy.
Yeah, oh, that bussy was real wet. So I immediately panic. I'm like, what in the fuck is this? Am I dying? Have I blown a gasket inside? I'm thinking, is this leakage? Is there something that's going on in my insides? I immediately Google orange oily poop, and right the first image that pops up was like, have you been eating a lot of cashews? I was like, yes I have. So apparently you can eat so many cashews that your body can't handle and process the oils, so they're just like, nah, you just go, we're not, you don't need this, and it just goes out through your pooper. Can also happen if you take a lot of omega-3 fatty acids or eat like a ton of fish. So I ate too much of that, and that's just what happens to your butthole when you have too many fatties in there. So that's the life I'm living. I didn't hate it. I'll be honest with you. Of all the weird things that have come out of my butt, it was neither painful nor gross. Didn't even smell. It smelled minerally, oddly enough. And I put it on some popcorn later that night. It tasted great. So check out Eric's Kettle Corn Company. It's called Orange Chew. So that's available at the store now, the Woodworth Brothers Emporium.
I hate to reveal secrets, but we've been using your butt lube for years at Regal.
It's just, I'm just hooked up like one of the women in Mad Max, the milking ones. It's just a tube to my asshole straight into the popcorn machine. Like, oh, good times.
We don't even call it butter. Like, they just call it topping, but I think we're going to change it to bussy topping.
Bussy topping. Hell yeah. Jeremy, you wrote a song for Gramps, and it was, you know, by the time this is airing, it's already aired on the Rob and Joe show about 2 weeks ago. So do you want to have some afterthoughts about two things? The Rob and Joe show, A, played a prank on you, and B, also you had a song about Gramps. Would you like to chat about that real quick and maybe let our listeners in?
Yeah, I was driving back from work one night, and I get a call, and they're playing off like the Rob and Joe show is actually on. And I said, are you guys actually live on there? And like, yeah, we're live on the air. And I'm like, okay, this makes no sense, because it's a Tuesday night, and I know that the Purple Power Hour is on Monday nights. So I go, wow, that's crazy. So somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm trying to buy this, like, maybe they're recording it for next week. Yeah. Even though there's not going to be a Ravens game. And, yeah.
Well, if there's a hope, I feel like you have to play it like that, right? There's a hope there. And you're like, all right, maybe I really am. I'm going to play it. I'm going to play it loose and tight.
No, I'm pretty much figuring that this is like a ruse from like the DOD, and like the government is just watching me right now. So I'll have to play along with it. And hopefully they won't be able to catch me on the streets. So I'm ready to make my escape out of my truck and just run and get my ghillie suit like I always ready to do. So.
But so they had a little fun at your expense. But I guess the reason you did this is because with 22 minutes left of the Purple Power Hour on Monday, you called and say, "Hey, can I be on air?" And Joe was just like, "What is he on?"
Well, that's way too late in the game. No, no, you're never going to get on. No, no. I mean, I'm not asking, like, you know, I'm asking, like, just to be on for, like, a minute or something. I'm not asking, like, the end of the world. And they're just chatting up because they already have their spiel. They're keeping it going. So they just ignored me and, like, no. They gave me a shout out at the end. I was very happy about that. That makes me happy as
well. You
as
did. I think as loser. I don't think you're a loser, Jeremy. You're just still looking for your win. But you did have a big win. That was the nicest way to call you a loser. So but you did, Jeremy. There was a big accomplishment. You did write the Purple Power Hour theme song, and that got played throughout the season multiple times.
Yeah, and I got really scared when they said they might not play it again. I was like, no, I'll do two more songs. Just keep playing something of mine on the radio so I don't kill myself.
You've been played more on the radio 98 Rock than I have at this point, Jeremy. You made it.
I just want to be played as much as Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle, and Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Can we do our listeners, if you guys are listening, it's February now. Text in to 98 Rock every chance you get and say, play the Purple Power Hour theme song by Jeremy Woodworth. Demand it. I want the fan. I want to hear part of Amelia's afternoon show. I want her to do a vinyl cut of the Purple Power Hour song that Jeremy wrote.
I bet you Wendy Townsend would do it if I gave her like $5.
$5? She's a $6 hoe, okay? You best come correct. No.
She's like, I could lose my job, but if you give me $5, maybe. So.
Shout outs. So, look, Jeremy, you wrote a song for Gramps, though. A song for Gramps, who is
going for power rating number one now. So,
and it's about Gramps trying to. Well, the power ratings are based by Mac Bergson alone. And what was his take on the song that you wrote, which is basically about Gramps trying to fuck your wife? That's the premise of the song. And if you know, I'll throw it at the end of this episode for people who don't listen to Rob and Joe, so you guys can give it a listen. But
and when I say fuck your wife, I'm of course talking about Joe's wife, Katie.
Yes. So. Okay. I didn't know it was specifically for that. That rocks. <Yeah.
laughs> So what are we talking about? Are we talking about
Mac Bergson? What did Mac Bergson say about the song? Because he does the power rankings.
Yeah, he says, I loved it, but if Gramps hates it, I hate it.
So it's all hinging on Gramps' response, which we don't know yet, but I'm sure by the time this airs, you guys will all know if you're followers of Rob and Joe and us and the multiverse of the Die Laughing Productions podcast universe. So
yeah, I don't even know Gramps. I think I was over at the Joe residence once when he was there, and you know, who knows, he might not be into the salty talk or might take it personal, and I guess I'll be banned from the Robin Joe show.
Well, he is a bit of a wordsmith. He's a poet. I don't think he would just say, "I'd fuck your wife." He would say, "You're the prettiest girl in the world, and you're about to give me a heart attack." You're like, that's more of a Gramps kind of thing.
I'm going to have a heart attack because I'm old. Maybe when I fuck you, I might die.
I like that.
I want to be so old one day where I just talk it. Instead of "you're beautiful," he's like, "You're making my heart race. I'm about to go to the ICU.
I love it. I'm on board with this. Jeremy, I want you to write a whole new album. I want to hear things like, "Ashley, when I look at you, I spill oil." Things like that. Like, I want that type of...
What was the line from Bubba Hotep that his ED is like maybe like an animal that just barely is kicking after it died? It's like inside his pants. So
yeah, something like that. He's got some good ones about ED that really spoke to me.
No, I would go for like an old man version song, like, you know, "You kind of fucked me until I died, but you kind of brought me back to life, and then I died again. So, yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
Are we ready to get into tonight's movie, though, ladies and gents? I'm ready. Yeah. I didn't pull intro music, but we're going over the 1983. I use the word classic loosely. I think it's lost a bit of its luster over the years. But David,
I'd say it's top 10 cult movie of all time.
Yeah, I could go there. It falls right in the same world as like Society and like those other kind of like cult classics. It's David Cronenberg's Videodrome from 1983, the year I was born, starring James Woods. And David Cronenberg, also probably most famous for the movie The Fly, of course, which is a great piece of cinema from beginning to end.
I was going to say Nightbreed.
He is. Well, he's actually in Nightbreed on top of that. Did he actually direct Nightbreed as well?
No, that's Clive Barker, but he stars as the evil psychiatrist in Nightbreed.
Yeah, he plays Decker in that, which is, I always thought that I actually read the book Nightbreed. The movie Nightbreed is pretty close. It's not perfect, but it's pretty close representation, because when I read the character Decker, I thought David Cronenberg brought to life that character almost perfectly how I imagined him in my head. So
probably one of my top five Danny Elfman themes for that movie.
Yeah, it is good. I heard they're remaking that too. I think they're rebooting the Nightbreed series. Cabal.
The best role for Jay Leno is the guy that looks like the moon.
Oh yeah, that guy's looking. Hey, look at me. Oh, who's going to do the J? Hey, look at me. This is my friend with the freak things. And, you know, I just make jokes and got a moon face. Meh, meh. Hey, you want a Big Mac? I was also the moon guy from that, man. People don't know about that. But
did you want to tear your face off and show your true face? It's wacky.
I told Eric I watched a ton of Cronenberg movies this week before I even got to Videodrome, because that's how I'm, you know, putting off responsibilities.
Did you see Rabid?
Yes. So I watched Rabid actually a few weeks back. But I watched Rabid, I watched Dead Ringers, Videodrome, and then The Brood. And yeah, I haven't been able to eat much this week, which is probably good because I'll get thinner. But yeah, I just haven't had much of an appetite after watching his movies.
You know, the best part about Dead Ringers is that it stars Jeremy Irons, who's not only a prolific British actor, but his name is also like a verb, because he's like Jeremy is ironing.
I've got something he can iron. You know, he's like one of those weird, like, he's kind of hot. Not so much in that movie, but yeah, young Jeremy Irons, younger Jeremy Irons. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I'll let him do my laundry.
He's like just a little bit gayer than John Malkovich, but he definitely does chicks.
Yeah. That's what I like. I like a slightly effeminate man. Looks like a cherub.
So this movie has a pretty decent star-studded cast. You know, it's anchored by the great James Woods. James Woods, who I think doesn't get enough credit for being a bit of a horror icon. You know, he's in John Carpenter's Vampires, of course, Videodrome, which is a cult classic. And people forget he's also in the movie The Cat's Eye, I believe. Cat's Eye, where it's the one about not smoking. He's in the not smoking story, which I think is a great little tale. So
there's a two movie that goes together. And of course, that's the classic swan song, Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America, that's like 10 hours long, where he plays the ultimate scumbag mafioso. But little do people know that there's a sequel to that with Robert De Niro, known as Casino, where he's also a scumbag who's like the pimp of Sharon Stone,
yeah,
and has to deal with Robert De Niro. And it's just a perfect bookshelf between Once Upon a Time America and Casino. So
I always thought the thing that was missing in the RoboCop reboot is having James Wood as the head of OCP, because he would have been great at that role, you know, if you're going to bring him to life.
Too young.
Not now, though. Not if in the reboot of RoboCop, because that was fucking horrible. That was PG-13. Like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. James Woods would be a fucking great head of OCP, I think.
Yeah. The only person that could have taken over as the head of OCP is the Smuckers man. I'm running OCP now, and we're just going to change over to Smuckers instead of Robotronics.
Well, this movie, Videodrome, is probably the most socially commentary movie that David Cronenberg has ever produced. It's really, Andy Warhol actually called this the Clockwork Orange of the 80s, which I don't know if I buy that, but it's a fear that's, I think, echoed throughout the 80s in a couple of different movies. I think Poltergeist does this really well, and it's the idea is TV bad, and is the things that are on TV bad, right? Like, because there's a subtext to like Poltergeist of like having your TV and this thing that's in your life. Is it really harmless? I don't think so. So it really plays on that, and I think some of the frustrations, but it's also such a self-serving Hollywood movie where it's just like, this is we're fucking bad people, and you don't even know how bad we are. Like, dude, you make fucking shiny pictures on a screen, and let's not get carried away with the importance of your job. But anyway, that's Videodrome for the most part. It follows the story of Max Wren, the president of Channel 83 Civic TV, a small television station on a UHF dial. He defends his programming of largely X-rated shows, which depicts graphic sex and extreme violence as a pure matter of economic survival in a small station. So, yeah, he basically just shows porn on a UHF station, and that's his gig, and anything to get the ratings in kind of guy. So, let's hop into the movie.
By the way, Lloyd Kaufman was on the early episodes of Martin Downey Jr., and, of course, he was, like, escorted off violently on the show, but Martin Downey Jr. was just as equally as staged as any
Jerry Springer or anything else. You're right.
And he was told what was going to happen, and of course, you know, there I've been told from very close people that have been on it, it's like it was all staged. So you know, yeah. it was like he said, okay, he's going to blow smoke in your face, and he's going to practically beat you up and everything. And it's like, okay, it's TV. It's entertainment. That's, so, you know.
That is what it is. They have a... it's funny you mentioned Morton Downey, because I've been watching all of the Tales from the Crypt episodes. There's an episode starring Morton Downey Jr. where he basically plays himself as a street reporter that goes to a haunted
as
house.
As Geraldo.
As basically, yeah, like a Geraldo-like character who gets murdered in a haunted house, which is it's a fun episode. But yeah, Morton Downey Jr. was an extra. He was the original, unlike any of the other shows, like, because, you know, he came out at a time where it's like Sally Jesse Raphael and Phil Donahue, these serious Oprah-type shows where you sit down and we have a nice touchy feeling, and he was the first guy that was like Jerry Springer. He's just like, I'm gonna have fucking transsexual Nazi Eskimos on, and we're gonna talk about what's happening in the world with them as I smoke cigarettes during my show and call you a fucking bitch. So yeah, he was the first like real heel, and he was really like, he never tried to be the good guy. He was always just a primo dick on his show,
and he actually forced people to eat his warts.
just like sweet Senator Lindsey Graham.
There's Ladybug.
There's Ladybug. That is the best story about Lindsey Graham and his asshole that's covered with fucking pockmarks that he calls his Ladybugs. He's turbo gay, guys. Anyway, great senator Lindsey Graham. So
I never know what he'll be from day to day.
I'm Lindsey Graham. Anyway, it starts off with Max getting his video wake-up call because everything is just on video cassettes. I love that it really embraces the technology of the 80s during this. He kind of lives like a total scumbag. He makes his coffee and dips his wings in it. He's just a real piece of shit. And he's looking over the pictures for a show he's thinking about picking up called Samurai Dreams, which he's just looking at pictures of Asian girls with their titties out. That's his show prep for this.
I love that we've been on a real Asian kick the last couple of episodes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So he goes to meet the creator.
I really do hate the commentary of this film. It's like that watching things on TV are bad, because all I do is watch like snuff films of black people and of puppies all the time. So,
all right. I'm perfectly... so he goes to meet the Asian producers of this film, and you'll notice that one guy's the main producer is played by David Tobuishi, who I believe is from Revenge of the Nerds, if I'm not mistaken. Jeremy, is that correct?
I wouldn't recognize him from Revenge of the Nerds. Who was he in Revenge of the Nerds?
Maybe I'm wrong. I clicked on his name and I was completely wrong. But anyway, that's
Oh damn it, we lost Ashley.
No, I think she just killed her video feed.
No,
for
I'm
a second.
Here.
She's still working. Don't worry.
Yeah, I have to go back and forth.
So he asked to just James Woods asked immediately to just skip to episode 13, and so you can see the titties. He's like, I only need episode 13. We need the rest of this stuff. He brings it back to the producers at Channel 83 to show it to them, and they're very stiff, bored of two other gentlemen and James Woods, and they kind of talk about the titties that they're looking at, and I have an audio clip here.
What do you think? Can we get away with it? Do we want to get away with it?
They've oriental sex is a natural. Only the biggest audience we've ever had before.
I don't like it. Not tacky enough.
Not tacky enough for what?
Tacky enough to turn me on. Too much class, bad for sex.
Maybe. I don't know. Soft. Something too soft about it.
Yeah,
something that'll break through, you know, something tough.
Like, can we get this little chick get her nipples ripped off or something here? I mean, it's just not doing it for me. Regular Asian titties, we can't show this.
When he says oriental sex is unnatural.
You know, I think Oriental Dreams is a better name than Orient than did I say Oriental?
Samurai Dreams.
Samurai.
Yeah.
I think Samurai Dreams was a better name than Samurai Dildo.
The best part though is whenever you're having sex with an Asian person and you want to switch up your moves, all you have to do is go, I want to do number 67.
You have to order it like a menu. I like that.
Position number 60... one best American pussy.
Man, Ashley, your audio sounds real, real breaking up right now. Real breaking up.
I'm sorry.
So, Max goes to discover the next big thing and visits his secret tech guy, who is basically a video pirate. He intercepts foreign video feeds and stuff like that with his giant satellite dish. And Harlan finds some interesting pirated Malaysian rape porn, which he really is into. It's just a red thing of this lady getting whipped over and over again. And he was like, man, this is really good stuff. I think this could be our next breakthrough, this wonderful dominatrix rape stuff. This is something our listenership is really going to like, I think. So he's certainly intrigued by the idea of this and seems to like it. But next, and this is kind of a long clip I'm going to set up. Next, he's on a TV talk show where we get to meet Nikki, played by Debbie Harry, of course, from the wonderful 80s group Blondie. Jeremy, is this her only film that we've ever seen her in? I can't name any other Deborah Harry movies.
come now. This is, what, 83, so how many years later she does Tales from the Dark Side movie where she plays the witch going to eat the small child in her kitchen? And she's probably playing what could be a 40-something lady, even though she might have been still almost in her 30s.
All right, nice. So, and
let's just say she might have aged a little badly due to lots of cocaine in the 70s. So,
well, yeah. You know, cocaine speeds up your life, and in more ways than one.
She don't lie.
So here's a clip of Max meeting Nikki on air at this talk show. Where we'll also get to meet Brian Oblivion right after.
And now, here it is, the Rita King Show. And this afternoon, Rita's guests are Max Wren, controversial president of Channel 83, radio personality Nikki Brand, and media prophet Professor Brian Oblivion. Take it away, Rita.
Max Wren, your television station offers its viewers everything from softcore pornography to hardcore violence. Why?
Well, it's a matter of economics, Rena. We're small. In order to survive, we have to give people something they can't get anywhere else. And we do that.
But don't you feel such shows contribute to a social climate of violence and sexual malaise? And do you care?
Certainly I care. I care enough, in fact, to give my viewers a harmless outlet for their fantasies and their frustrations. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a socially positive act.
What about it, Nikki? Is it socially positive?
Well, I think we live in overstimulated times. We crave stimulation for its own sake. We gorge ourselves on it. We always want more, whether it's tactile, emotional, or sexual. And I think that's bad.
Then why did you wear that dress?
Sorry?
That dress. It's very stimulating. And it's red. You know what Freud would have said about that dress.
And he would have been right. I admit it. I live in a highly excited state of overstimulation.
Ooh, highly over. I love it that they're already playing into, well, looks like you deserve it for wearing that dress, you dumb bitch.
Yeah.
Just right out the gate.
It was great. I loved watching that scene, and I was like, holy shit, am I at a comedy show? This is fun.
Hey, the next thing James Wood said, it was cut, but he said, hey, maybe we should write together sometime right after that. That's a fun thing.
You know, the worst thing is like being on a bad Islamic talk show, and it's like the woman got raped. It's like, I think you showed 2 inches of skin under your burqa one day and you got raped.
Yeah, I saw the tip of her nose the other day, and boy, oh boy, it was too much for me to handle.
And I couldn't help myself but to rape.
Yeah.
Boy, she was wearing a red burqa. I mean, come on.
I was highly excited.
So
it was the color of blood of infidels.
Let's just as men just all kill ourselves right now.
All right, let's do it. I'm ready.
I'm tired of life unless I'm raping all the time. So
yeah, I'm like we're headed towards the future that Roddy Piper I think intended in the movie, the great film Hell Comes to Frogtown, which is available in our archives, where he's the last man alive and has to wear a girdle so he can have sex with all the women in the world.
I was going to say the Goonies video with Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, yes, that's yes, a Captain Lou Albano reference. God, how bad is the apocalypse if the only people that are left is me and Jeremy Woodworth? Like, ugh, gross.
You mean I got to repopulate the world? I'm tired. You just use like a turkey baster or something.
Oh man, I'm hooked up for the popcorn. Jeremy's hooked up for the baby making. I get it. That's the future that we're headed to, guys. So next we get to meet the other talking head, who's only appearing on a television screen in the studio, and this is Mr. Brian Oblivion.
The television screen has become the retina of the mind's eye.
Yes.
That's why I refuse to appear on television. Except on television. Of course, Oblivion is not the name I was born with. That's my television name. Soon, all of us will have special names. Names designed to cause the cathode ray tube to resonate.
Yes.
Oh, look at that. The cathode ray tube. So,
my name isn't Oblivion. It's actually Dixfag. I chose a different name for the television because I was tortured in school for my name.
I think it would be fun if clearly, you know, there's a whole Oblivion family now. He's changed his name, and there's there if If there's a Brian Oblivion, I think it suggests that he also has a piece of shit brother named Harry Oblivion, which is, he's like, hey, what's up? I'm Harry Oblivion, and I exist only on 8 tracks, and I come after every single Journey song. Here we go. Welcome to Harry Oblivion, home of the...
I know my brother Sylvester Oblivion is a more famous... But I am Frank Oblivion.
Frank
so.
Oblivion. Yes. So he then leaves the studio after asking Sweet Nikki out on a date later, and heads back to his pirate guy, Harlan, who finds some more Videodrome videos from Malaysia. But he's very, very fascinated by this new hypersexual violent media he's found.
Brilliant. Perverts only.
Absolutely brilliant. I mean, look, there's almost no production costs. You can't take your eyes off it. It's incredibly realistic. Where do they get actors who can do this?
Oh, well, I think he wants it.
Come on. It's worth checking out. Did you have any trouble locking onto it this time?
Not after I realized the Malaysia delay was a plant.
It's not coming from Malaysia?
You cannot fool the Prince of Pirates for long.
Harlan, where is it coming from?
Pittsburgh. That's in the USA.
Oh, no, not Pittsburgh! Oh, God!
I love Pittsburgh, but I'm not going to lie. Am I the only one who saw that scene and thought, holy shit, is that Jeremy's basement?
Oh, not enough.
Obviously not, because the floor isn't covered with skin.
The little known fact
Yet.
Is that
Yet.
Now that I'm shitting oil constantly, I actually need Jeremy to constantly do his skin droppings because they pick it up like a cat litter all the time. So it's nice. We're a good combo.
Jeremy is the fresh step of the family.
Yes. So next, Max heads to go pick up Nikki Brand for their little date. She works as a radio DJ, as like a help hotline, which is very funny, as we're going to find out. She is that should not be her job. She gets back to Max's place and tries to throw on Videodrome, and she seems to really enjoy it.
I like it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it turns me on. Take out your Swiss Army knife and cut me here, just a little.
So somebody's beat me to it.
I wonder how you get to be a contestant on this show.
I don't know. Nobody ever seems to come back next week. What did you say happened to your shoulder?
A friend. I think he'd like Videodrome.
You let somebody cut you?
Uh-huh. What do you think?
I don't know.
You want to try a few things?
And try some things they do. I think the next scene you get to see James Woods' butt and a lot of Debbie Harry's titties as he does some ritualistic piercing of her ears. And it is, and as he's licking the needle and stuff. So some real hardcore stuff with the great Nikki here in that scene, which I believe this song was inspired by, is the thing that inspired the Prince song Darling Nikki. She had so many devices, anything that money could buy, right here.
I was gonna say Walking on Sunshine.
I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa! And don't it feel good.
I honestly never thought to have my lover pierce my ears. I would have saved a lot of money over the years getting things pierced if I just asked my boyfriends, being like, hey, do you love me? Stick a needle in me. Like, missed out.
As this is all going down, though, you can kind of see.
Can I make my social commentary here? This kind of reminds me of the scene in Hellraiser with Frank and Julia after they're sitting on the bed, and he's like, man, I fuck so good. All she wants to do is fuck, and I'm just tired of fucking right now. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. can women just get enough of fucking?
That is true. I guess I don't know what you're getting at, but you know.
But he really, but as like a demon, he really builds up his brownie points. He's like, okay, if I ever get torn apart by demons, will you bring me fresh souls so that I can like suck the blood out of them until I grow my skin back? I mean, if you really do me a favor, I just need to suck people's blood until I get my skin back.
That, you know, who amongst us hasn't had that problem, you know? You'll also notice that during the scene, while he's, like, piercing her, they're kind of transported into the fantasy world of the Videodrome, where it's the red wall and that torture room. So, having a real great time. The next day, Max goes to meet with Masha, who is a gypsy woman who is also a TV producer, who's trying to sell him Apollo's something. It's a weird Greek thing that has lots of titties in it. He's like, this is the scene of Dionysus, and you will like this. And,
let's just say, okay, it's the TV version of Caligula. Oh, yeah. Look, it's got Sir Laurence Olivier looking at people fucking horses.
Yes. So he's not really interested in the video, but he is interested in trying to find out where Videodrome is.
Do you know a show called Videodrome?
Video what?
D-R-O-M-E. Videodrome, like video circus, video arena. You know it?
No.
It's just torture and murder. No plot, no characters. Very, very realistic. I think it's what's next.
Then God help us.
Better on TV than on the streets.
Excuse me?
I love that the sweet gypsy lady is giving him words of advice. And God help us. We must... I do gypsy curses, but rape porn on television may be too much.
Hey, look, if you can't stand the kink, stay out of Pittsburgh. Yeah. Am I right?
Masha also...
Tonight on CBS 2025, it's Puppy Kill. You'll see puppies killed in so many different ways you've never seen before, followed by Rape Is Us. Yeah. You'll see people raped like never raped before.
And check out Animal Planet and our whole hour of baby seal sodomy, where it's just it's just Jeremy Woodworth sodomizing baby seals for an hour. Who knew he could go so long? Will he pop before? Can he beat Michael Phelps? Let's see tonight on Animal Planet.
The ice is always bloodied at the end when he beats them to death. And Michael Phelps always gives his lovely commentary.
They don't have VH1 anymore. It's H1N1, and it's nothing but people giving each other diseases.
So, Masha's...
Michael Rodman just coughed right in my mouth. I got a new disease.
Michael, you mean Dennis Rodman, but
Well, his brother, Dennis, Michael Rodman.
Michael Rodman. Dennis Rodman's also incredibly diseased brother.
We couldn't afford Dennis Rodman. He'd cost too much for the show.
Wait, did you blend two black basketball players into Michael, one super basketball player?
This is Michael Jordan mixed with Dennis Rodman. I like it.
I'm the son of Michael Phelps and Dennis Rodman. That's right, Michael Rodman.
Jeremy talking about sports is my favorite thing.
I'm the best basketball player and swimmer of all time.
But if you make it to the end of the show, you get to see Magic Bird, and he gives everybody AIDS.
Just make sure you don't look at anything when you see the evil demon that likes birds. So.
It was funny. It's funny that you brought up Magic Johnson, because I had an idea. If you're familiar with the great stuntman, Dick Warlock was the original. He was the original Michael Myers, the guy who was in the suit. But he was also played the stunt double for Snake Plissken, aka Kurt Russell, in the movie Escape from New York. So Dick Warlock, I always thought, should have like a post-apocalyptic show, or like a Middle Earth style fantasy show, where it's the armies of Dick Warlock versus the good armies of Magic Johnson, and it's just a big penis war. Dick Warlock and Magic Johnson going at it every single day. That
but
these
again,
are the things that
I, I think we know which army's gonna win, though, right?
I mean, it is a Magic Johnson, and apparently all you need is that name and you can cure yourself of AIDS. So
can we call up Zack Snyder and we'll hook up Avengers Dick War right now.
Avengers Dick War with Dick Warlock and Magic Johnson and fucking Peen McSlap Happy. Peen McSlap Happy. That's my pen name. Masha does suggest that he should just do his own Videodrome if you think it's so good, and she wants to sell it to the subterranean market and work together more. So she's going to reluctantly go look for this media. Next, Nikki says that she's headed to Pittsburgh next week to audition for Videodrome, which is... Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what that process is like. I imagine, like, now if they remade this, it would be like a Simon Cowell saying, "Okay, so are you you willing to have a cigar put out in your asshole or what? What are we doing here today?" It's a no for me, dog. I've already seen ear piercing. He warns her though, don't go there and stay away from Videodrome. It's too dangerous.
Listen to me.
What?
I want you to stay away from it. Those Mondo weirdo video guys, they've got unsavory connections. They play rough. Rougher than even Nikki Brand wants to play. Do you understand me?
Sounds like a challenge.
Whoa. So she then responds by taking a cigarette and putting it out on her titty right after that. And she's like, I think I can handle it. And I'm like, I think, you know, James Woods, he's being a little bit of a pussy here. She's clearly into this type of behavior at this point. It is weird that she's
There's
seeking out.
There's obviously
a reason. No, go ahead, Ash. You were breaking up there.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say there's obviously a reason they call her hot tits.
So can I
say the first thing you never want to hear on a first date?
Yeah.
Hey, this ain't my first bukkake.
Wait, am I not supposed to say that on a date?
Well, at least wait till second or third.
So Max then
goes, then he reveals that he likes killing puppies. So.
Yeah, that's how it works. That sometimes it'd be like that though. Next,
like, what, you join me with the puppy killing?
Yeah.
So next, he heads to lunch with Masha at a weird belly dancing restaurant, which I thought was very bizarre. There's a long belly dancing scene here, but Masha warns him to probably stay away from Videodrome.
Videodrome is something for you to leave alone. It is definitely not for public consumption.
Channel 83 is a little small to be considered public.
It is still too public. Do you understand me?
No, what is it? What's the punchline?
I think it's dangerous, Max. Videodrome.
Why? But it's mafia. They do business.
It's more, how can I say... more political than that.
Come on, Masha, what are we talking about?
Videodrome. What you see on that show, it's for real. It's not acting. It's snuff TV.
I don't believe it.
Agree to disagree. Can I go? Can you show me where this is filmed now? But she then goes on to reveal that the producer of Videodrome is none other than the talking head... Brian Oblivion, the leader of the Videodrome project. So Max heads to a derelict church that has been rehabbed into a weird shelter / worship center for the good doctor. It's a like hospital filled with divider rooms that's showing horrible things to a bunch of like derelict homeless people and just showing them gore and filth. He is able to meet up with Bianca Oblivion, daughter of Brian Oblivion, who shows him to the good doctor's office. His office, though, can I mention, is rad as fuck. Like, I want my office to look like Brian Oblivion's office. It just has like this really rad fucking metal ass, it's like Greek sculptures and cool ass wood ass furniture, and I really dig it, and it's how I want to live my life moving forward. And the bums, they're treating the bums that they're referring to as the derelicts down there and getting them normalized to the violence and stuff that's in the streets. But Brian won't meet with him in person, but he says, I think he should because I know about this.
Video drum.
Is that a Japanese configuration?
You've never heard of it?
No.
Then there have been serious gaps in your education. Videodrome. Mention it to your father. He may want to have a conversation.
So, he drops the Videodrome reference, so he might be in on the in here. So, Max heads back home, and his assistant brings up. He's like cleaning his gun while he's looking at it, and his assistant comes in and drops off his wake up tape, as well as another tape from Mr. Brian Oblivion. She tries to grab the Videodrome tape at one moment, and he rushes over and slaps the shit out of his assistant, who then is all of a sudden Debbie Harry, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry that I hit you, and she's like, well, you didn't hit me. So he's having some weird hallucinations. He rushes her out after that and explains that the other, you know, she tells him that the other video is from Brian Oblivion. He picks it up, and the second he touches it, he... sees the video kind of breathe in his hand, which is a pretty rad effect. He pops the tape in and gets to watch a little message from the Brian Oblivion.
The battle for the mind of North America will be fought in the video arena. The video drone. The television screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, the television screen is part of the physical structure of the brain. Therefore, whatever appears on the television screen emerges as raw experience for those who watch it. Therefore, television is reality, and reality is less than television.
Max, I'm so glad you came to me. I've been through it all myself, you see. Your reality is already half video hallucination. If you're not careful, it will become total hallucination. You'll have to learn to live in a very strange new world. I had a brain tumor, and I had visions. I believe the visions caused the tumor and not the reverse. Feel the visions coalesce and become flesh. Uncontrollable flesh. But when they removed the tumor, it was called Videodrome. I was Videodrome's first victim.
Oh, man. And he gets strangled on camera while he's talking to the thing. And it's revealed that the person that strangles him is none other than sweet, darling Nikki. As I burp into the microphone, and I'm not going to edit it out. I'm just going to leave it. That's how we're going to roll with the show here. A lot to consume in that scene. TV is reality, and it definitely plays on the weird psychoanalysis that reality is really whatever you make it. Reality is the things that you see, and playing on a lot of aspects there. This movie tries to be deeper, I think, than it actually deserves at times, and
agreed.
This is one of those moments. I mean, we're watching Deborah Harry's titties and choking porn, and then this is reality. It's just, I love the way that Hollywood thinks so highly of themselves that they think they can control your life, and like you can't just watch something and be like, oh, that was cute, and then move on. Which is, I think things like this have kind of proven themselves wrong because our attention deficit is so little and lacking. So they are right in the fact that we kind of want this overstimulation, but we get bored really, really easily, so it's the next thing. And, you know, listen, we would get tired of rape porn eventually, and we'd have to have seal fucking. What I'm saying is the next big thing is seal fucking.
Well,
This confirms like why I actually don't watch porn. I start very, very low. So like instead I'll have guys tape themselves saying mean things to me, and that is more realistic.
Yes, yes. So she then beckons Nikki beckons Max to come closer to the TV, and in a pretty cool effect, the TV starts to get real veiny, like fucking cock veiny around it. And I just remember the it's a great scene as the TV kind of starts to breathe, and like the cock veins are over it, and her mouth is like superimposed, and it the screen bubbles out like a balloon, and he just kind of sticks his face into this veiny cock TV. It's a fun scene, and it's super cool practical effect. I definitely dug that part of it.
Can I say this is a movie why I will never do acid, because I end up like waking up fucking a TV somehow.
Now, as a person who's done acid, Jeremy, let me tell you, probably don't do it. I think I know enough about you that it would not be a good drug for you. Maybe start with a low dose of psilocybin, the magic mushrooms. A, they're natural. B, the worst thing you get is a tummy ache. And C, you won't fuck anything, trust me, on hallucinogenics, because it's too weird because everything is fucking melting. And you can't have sex while something's melting in front of you. At least me. I've never seen like a fucking sludge running down the wall and be like, yeah, I can fuck that. It's just never been a thing that's turned me on.
Are you telling me this is why guys keep dumping me?
So, yeah, pretty cool practical effect. I really enjoyed it. And then it I don't know. It's cool. And it's going to get weirder as we dive deeper into Videodrome. He goes back to talk to Bianca, and she explains to him that, oh, yeah, you watch Videodrome. Just to let you know, it totally causes tumors. He's like, what the fuck? How the fuck? It causes tumors? What are you talking about?
This is all that's left.
What are you talking about?
Oh, and then she goes on to explain that what's left of Brian Oblivion, because he died years ago. All that exists of him are the videos that he recorded before he died.
Brian Oblivion died quietly on an operating table 11 months ago.
The brain problem?
The Videodrome problem. You have it too.
But he was on that panel show with me.
On tape. He made thousands of them, sometimes three or four a day. I keep him alive as best I can. He had so much to offer. My father helped to create Videodrome. He saw it as the next phase in the evolution of man as a technological animal. When he realized what his partners were going to use it for, he tried to take it away from them. And they killed him. Quietly. At the end, he was convinced that public life on television was more real than private life in the flesh. He wasn't afraid to let his body die.
So, not afraid to let his body die, which I think that another thing they're trying to expose here is like, I guess the evolution of where a lot of people are saying where man is going to go, where we're going to become part bionic in a way, that we will become part machine as we advance as a species, which I think we're already starting to see in certain respects. I mean, there's people who have prosthetic limbs, and the technology is getting better and better for that. Eventually, Google thinks that they're going to be able to download your consciousness onto a hard drive. So some pretty cool ideas for the 1980s, I guess, but now that are kind of commonplace.
Hence, we will all listen to D'Anfert and become Chappie.
Yes, so. We will be Chappie. I am Chappie.
also, this movie really documents why Betamax was banned, because Betamax tapes do start breathing and they give us cancer and start us wanting to be into ultra violence. The favorite part of the movie is when James Woods starts feeling the breathing TV on the top of the TV. Not only has an Atari 2600 game a reel-to-reel tape and the Betamax video.
Yeah. Now, he did have a fun story. Jeremy and I grew up in a household where we did indeed have a Betamax cassette player and some Betamax Betamax cassettes. Now, Betamax is really not much different than VHS. It's just really a different size for the most part. I never noticed like a particular picture quality or anything that was different in it. But the reason that Betamax failed, as most things formats do fail, is because Betamax was not embraced by the pornographies of the world. It was all VHS. So VHS went through, Betamax died because all pornography was indeed on VHS. So
You might be right, but I think it was Betamax maxed out at 5 hours, whereas VHS maxed out at 8.
Oh, that's, I guess, another one I didn't really think about. But it's all about recording speed, too. So
You could fit 3.5 movies on a VHS, a really shitty quality,
yeah.
Whereas on a Betamax, only about 2.
All right, fair enough. I do remember that I had one tape that was a VHS that had the original Ghostbusters movie on it, and then right after The Wizard of Oz, and you could fast forward through the commercials, and I watched that video every day, and that's the horrible person that I am today from watching those.
The way, if you've not experienced it tonight, watch The Dark Side of Oz on YouTube if you've never seen it before.
Oh, with the where it's played with the Pink Floyd album, right?
With The Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd.
So. Yeah, I've watched it before. It's okay.
You don't even need to be high. It's just entertaining all around.
Wait, though. Eric, are you sincere that you actually had those very sweet, like, good movies, or is that code for the porn that you had on VHS? I don't understand.
Oh no, there was porn on VHS too. It was called Dad's Tape Don't Watch. It was in with all the rest of the tapes. I definitely watched it and definitely rewinded it back to the part it was stopped at every single time. So
was that the one with Ron Jeremy sucking himself off in between porn?
Yes, it was that, in fact. The tapes on uncover that the doctor believes it wasn't a tumor at all in his head, but an extra organ, a third eye, if you will. But as he's watching it at home, Max's scar on his belly opens up as we get to see what I can only describe as a gut pussy open up in his thing, and has his gun, and he shoves his gun into his fucking gut pussy, and then pulls his hand out, and the gun is gone. And Jeremy provided
us just another day for Annie Woodworth.
Yeah, any regular day.
Damn, my gun is in my stomach again. Damn it!
So Jeremy made a special song for this portion of the movie, where I think probably explains it better than I even possibly could. So here's Jeremy's song, Strap Yourselves In, turn it up extra loud at the office, and get ready for Video Vagina.
Can't hear it. Can't hear it.
Sit watching TV. Watching some stuff.
It's cutting out.
Taking my gun.
It's playing good on our end for the recording, so just let it ride.
Gonna rub it on my gut. Getting really wet now. Time to open up. Said vagina. Gonna stick it in and lose my wonder. Yeah, my video vagina. Going to spectacular optical. Gonna try out some mind control.
to breathe in beta tape. For me, gonna stick it in my video vagina. Maybe going to VHS, yeah. Or DVD vagina. Yeah. Put it in my hard drive.
Oh, God.
So I like the thing. I like that you threw a little bit of Wilford Brim in there, Jeremy. That was important. To me. Well, good job, Jeremy. You. That was jazzy. That was probably the most jazzy song you've ever done. I felt like I needed to smoke a cigarette while it was happening.
Yeah.
No guitar. All
Jeremy,
bass.
That was perfect. I'm saving that one too. That's going in my Ashley Spank Bank for when I'm alone. That's a three-finger salute, you know what I mean? Like, good job, Jeremy.
I found my feminine side on that song.
I like that.
I love it. Your song about Videodrome is so hot with that, like, gut pussy. I'm going to give you some Videodrome.
Now, see, I think one thing that we miss, by the way, thank you, Ashley, for that, Videodrome is probably needs to be the name of this episode. I think one thing that we miss out is that, you know, Max could have been better prepared. He probably came from like a conservative background, right? Something that, you know, wasn't really open about sex, right? And so I think if his parents had really taught him about the birds and bees, then he probably could have like understood his body a little bit more in the Videodrome world. So I kind of put together just a quick 1 minute thing right here, a little quick 1 minute song about, you know, some of the things he missed out on just, you know, growing up. So here's my little song about this scene. Well, my daddy left home when I was 9. Didn't leave me and Ma died. Just a crying wet and a little family secret. See, I didn't know it at the time, but I soon found out when I was 9 that I had a pussy on my gut that could play tapes. See, I never learned about the birds and bees, just the little things Ma explained to me. So I went ahead and explored upon my own. I'd finger it good with my bare fist and plunge it right down into the wrist. My girlfriend was shocked and full of shame. But when I asked her why, she would deny sticking her thumb right into my dang side. Sorry, Maxwell, leave it be. Get your gut pussy away from me. I know it's yours, but let it be. Keep your belly gash away from me. There you go. That's what I got. My Bob Dylan. You know, it's a storyteller song. Just really to the point. Ashley, how do you feel about our video, the things we've wasted our time on for the last 2 days?
I'm going to say something that I said when I joined this show. Which is, why am I not married? I don't...
Listen, you could have settled for one of us and you made a better choice, okay?
I'd like to think that maybe like somewhere in the 60s, Jimi Hendrix said, I want to do a cover of Gut Pussy instead of Along the Watchtower. You know?
Along my gut pussy, sticking in 12-inch vinyls.
Bob Dylan had such a thing on American culture, and he's like, I'm gonna write about my gut pussy and change the 60s so everybody be thinking about gut pussies. and I'm a Jew.
I gotta be honest, after listening to all of these amazing songs and your theories, I'm now totally rethinking that the Traveling Wilburys, actually, their song Handle With Care was about a gut pussy.
You might have yourself a gut pussy at the end of the line.
So right after this, he snaps out of his hallucination and a limo is there to come pick him up. He gets to meet Barry Convex, the creator of Videodrome, via tape in a limo that comes and picks him up. The car then drops him off at Spectacular Optical.
Can we say these are the worst movie names of all time? I'm Barry Convex. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Ted Oblivion. Oh, and thank you, Kylo Ren. And Nick sex a lot. What the fuck?
That's the future, is bad names and video. That's where the wars are being fought, Jeremy.
All right, guitar Rickenbacker.
So he walks into the store and he's trying on ridiculous glasses and definitely picks up like the glasses and puts them on. I think that they're the same ones that what's his name, Hoffman wears in Tootsie. He throws them on and he's like, look how cute I am. He's like, oh, those are pretty high tech. You want to put those down? We have some better ones for you.
Those are the ones that instantly make you a woman.
Yes. Oh my God. James Woods, a hot trans woman. That's the movie we all need in 2021. So Barry brings him back to show him the Videodrome prototype that will record his hallucination, which is basically like a giant fucking Virtua Boy that they put on his head. It lights up and is just like this big fucking helmet that goes over, and he's like, we'll be able to record your hallucination this way.
This is the new add-on for the Atari 2600, which will make games amazing.
Yes. So the Videodrome recorder
did you read the IMDb that said that Cronenberg had to double because Woods didn't want to wear it because he thought he'd be electrocuted by the big fucking helmet?
Yeah. He was like legit terrified. He's like, I'm not putting that fucking thing on. I see the budget of this film. I just touched the fucking veiny ass TV that looks like a fucking dick. I'm not going to put this thing on my head. I will die. So here's
the... Let's talk about the other important... the fact that the credits for this film were made on a Commodore 64.
That is true. All done on a Commodore 64. Jeremy's favorite piece of hardware.
Not a VIC-20.
Not a VIC-20.
Anyway,
Commodore 64. Here's a little bit about the Videodrome recorder.
That's why our Videodrome show is so strange. Something to do with the effects of exposure to violence on the nervous system. It opens up receptors in the brain and the spine, and that allows the Videodrome signal to sink in.
You mean I'm gonna have to hurt you, Barry?
Afraid not. You don't have to actually hurt anybody. You just have to think about it.
So he lets him there alone to go hallucinate because he doesn't want to watch it. He's like, I can't really cope with the freaky stuff. So I'm going to leave you alone here and do your weird jerk off S&M porn. All right. Talk to you later. Bye. And so... his hallucination begins and Nikki comes in with and hands him a whip. She then binds herself to open up those neuro floodgates, and all of a sudden he turns around. Now she's that weird breathing TV thing. He's in the red room and he starts whipping her with a cat o' nine tails over and over again, but it's the TV. But then she's on the TV screaming and I kind of likes it, and they pull back and we see it's no longer Nikki there, but it's actually that old bitch Masha on the screen, and it's just, it's a lot to take in right there. I had trouble not laughing at him whipping a TV screen repeatedly during the scene. I did. There was giggles and laughs, and I was like, man, this is so extreme. He's getting sexy with a TV. And he wakes up then in his apartment, and he sees that there's somebody under the covers with him, and it's a super dead Masha who's laying there with lashes all over her back and a face riddled with terror. So He runs to the other room of his apartment and then immediately calls Harlan to get his ass over there. Harlan shows up and he instructs Harlan to go into that bedroom and take pictures of what's there so I know that it's real. He comes back up and he says, I don't see anything. And he's like, well, did you get the video feed from the fucking video drone? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, if it was transmitted, the machine would have caught it.
I'll meet you in the lab in 1 hour. I want to see it.
Jeez, Max, it's not even 7
hours. Well, I am not just fucking around. Do you understand me?
Well, fuck you. I'm not just some fucking servo mechanism you can switch on and off. You want me to fall out of bed and run around like an asshole? You tell me what I'm doing it for. No. Otherwise, I'll see you during office hours, yeah, patrol. No.
Harlan, you're right. It's momentum. I'm running like an express train here. I don't know how to stop. Look, I'll meet you in the lab in 1 hour, okay? And then we'll see if we pulled in any video drone last night, and I'll tell you what's going on. Everything, I promise.
Oh, damn it, I lost you. Are you on mute?
I was on mute, sorry. So he goes back to the pirate station, and Barry is there, and he says there is no Videodrome, and there never was. He says that he was playing him tapes the whole time, and that he just exposed him. So Harlan is in cahoots with Barry, the creator of Videodrome, and we get to hear this right there.
Why would anybody watch a scum show like Videodrome? Why did you watch it, Max?
Business reasons.
Sure. Sure. What about the other reasons? Why deny you get your kicks out of watching torture and murder?
You murdered Brian Oblivion, didn't you, you freak? Did you enjoy that?
So he then goes on to explain that he thinks they're nuts for trying to broadcast this Videodrome stuff. And he tells him, he thinks, Barry tells him, he's like, I think you're ready for something new.
North America's getting soft, Patron. And the rest of the world is getting tough. Very, very tough. We're entering savage new times. And we're going to have to be pure and direct and strong if we're going to survive them. Now you and this cesspool you call a television station and your people who wallow around in it and your viewers who watch you do it, you're rotting us away from the inside. We intend to stop that rot.
We're going to start with Channel 83, Max. We're going to use it for our first authentic transmissions of Videodrome. I have a hunch it's going to be very popular. For a while.
I've got to be hallucinating now, right? I mean, you two can't possibly be for real.
So, all of a sudden, Barry pulls out a tape, and it starts breathing. He's like, I need you to go ahead and open up for me.
I want you to open up, Max. Open up to me.
And he takes the tape and shoves it right into James Woods' fucking gut pussy that's just breathing and it's gross and he has fucking vivid hallucinations about that he has to kill the people at the radio station and over and over again hearing this. And then as he's laying in the hallway, he has this hallucinization where he tries to pull out the tape, but then retrieves the gun that was placed there earlier. And then the gun grows like tubes that come out of his fingers and that go into his arms. It's fucking pretty metal looking. Very, very much like a Guar type gun hand that he's forming from his hallucinations. And he leaves there knowing what he must do after that. Jeremy, what did you think of the gun hallucination here as the mechanics become flesh on him?
Well, as a true Woodworth, I've always had my hand turn into a gun on the regular. I mean, that's like any other day.
Well, yeah, that's every 13th birthday in the Woodworth household, we get our gun hand. We know that, but maybe our listeners aren't super familiar with it.
It's like a bar mitzvah, and we all, you know, suck on bullets and you know, just like make little piles of gunpowder. But no the scene can totally be done better because James Wood is fighting the Videodrome, and when the guy shoves the videotape into his video vagina, you hear that it's like the mechanism isn't working, so it just spits the videotape out, and he has to keep shoving it in over and over again, but it keeps malfunctioning and shoving it back in. Like, we're going to have you worked on so that your beta will work in your video vagina.
Ashley, what did you think of the scene with the gun hand coming through the fingertips? I was disturbed a little bit. I thought it was some cool practical effects for sure.
I mean, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, that's, I think maybe that's where I don't get on board with a lot of Cronenberg's movies, is that I want more of the insane, the body horror. Like, as much as body horror grosses me out, if you're going to claim that that's what you are, I want to see it throughout. But I always feel like we have maybe 5-10 minutes tops in his movies of like really over the top body horror. Mm-hmm. And then the rest is like art class 101. And I just want to blow my fucking head off.
Can I run something by you?
Sure.
And I would never want to do this to you, cause it's really a horrible thing to do.
Great.
It's like, it is like an actual scene of like scratching psoriasis into a girl's mouth. I mean,
yeah. Hey, Ashley, do you want to do that?
I mean, I got tens of dollars.
Let's talk about this offshore show. And believe me, we would do it classily and use Parmesan cheese delicious.
Yeah, it would never be real horse psoriasis.
This is wild, because the thing I was going to say before we went there was that when Eric commits to his diet, does he shoot a pellet gun?
So he leaves there and goes to station to channel 83, goes straight into the boardroom where Moses is, and enters the boardroom, blows away the first guy with his new gun hand, and then backs up the second one and shoots him as well. During all the commotion, he's able to escape because nobody really knows what's going on after he murders two people that clearly were shot in the face, and nobody seems to suspect him because Max is a nice guy. Makes his way out to the streets, tucks the gun in his pocket, and makes his way back to the Oblivion Refuge with his new marching orders to kill Bianca Oblivion. So he breaks into the church, and Jeremy, that was a loud enough fart. It definitely resonated on air.
I didn't know if you heard that.
It was, I don't know how your neighbors didn't hear that. That was fucking loud as shit.
I should have been on mute.
he breaks into the Oblivion Church, and he's there to kill Bianca, but sees a TV with Nikki on it, who admits that she's already dead, and she's been dead for a long time. And now, apparently, after seeing that, he works for Bianca, and he has to go kill Barry, the creator of Videodrome. So now he's working for Bianca.
I am the video word made flesh.
Now that you are the video word made flesh, you know what you have to do. You turn against Videodrome. You use the weapons they've given you to destroy them. Death to Videodrome. Long live the new flesh.
Death to Videodrome.
So now he has his new marching orders to go kill Barry and the guys at Spectacular Optical.
Barry?
So he's wanted all over the news at this point. He sees Harlan entering Spectacular Optical and heads to the back where he chats with Harlan for a bit. Let's see if I can... There you go.
Maybe you'd like to visit somebody else now. Is that why you're here?
Maybe.
You've been very useful to us, Max. We'd like to keep using you until you're all gone.
He presents another videotape to go shove into his gash. It's breathing. He's excited. But as this is all happening, he takes the fucking tape and then shoves his whole hand into it, and it basically degloves Harlan's whole arm, and he pulls it out like, ah, like this. And then as he's backing up and screaming, he's going fucking nuts, and he says this.
See you in Pittsburgh.
And he just explodes. The guy, a human being, explodes on screen, which is pretty fun. I did enjoy this. I like the ridiculous level that the movie gets into at this point, because the rest of this is all a fever dream moving forward.
He didn't even drink any venom.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. So he then goes to head to the spectacular optical trade show where they're showing the Medici line, which is their new line of glasses. And listen, this Medici line is, oh my gosh, this scene made me laugh harder than anything, because it's dancers dressed as like Renaissance era people, but with a bit of like pastel and pizzazz. And if you
we
look
can dance
at this,
if we want to, we can leave your friends behind.
Yes.
We can still dance, and if they don't sense for that, no friends of mine.
And then it turns into this disco thing where if you watch this, it's mostly female dancers, but there's this one turbo gay man who is in the back, and you look at his face, and it's just like he's taking this thing like, This part in Videodrome is my big break. This is what I needed. And when you see his face, I was like, God damn it, I'm so excited for him.
Like, I'm a dancer for Madonna, but I'm the gayest dancer.
Yes, it is exactly that. It's exactly that. Barry eventually takes the stage, and we get to hear a little bit about him.
Love comes in at the eye, and the eye is the window of the soul. I think that even Pete ought to be able to sell the hell out of a classy campaign like that.
But as everybody's clapping, Max gets up, pulls out his fucking gun hand from his pocket, and shoots down Sweet Barry, who's on stage. And as he drops to the ground... Probably the coolest death in the fucking movie, as like his head splits apart and just starts convulsing. God, what a fucking awesome death. I mean, this is like...
He is literally becoming Tetsuo.
Yes. Oh, God. It's so badass, this death scene where like he's just... I don't know what they did. They were like, I don't even know how you explain this in storyboard form. He's like, yeah, I want to shoot him, but I also want his skull to be on the ground and breathing and like also shooting out organs while he's on the ground. It's just, it's a wonderful scene.
Hey, Ashley,
It's happened to a lot of guys after they've seen my gash.
My skull explodes and my flesh comes out of my mouth.
Yeah, they used to call me Gut Gashly. It's hurtful.
Gut Gashly.
Gut Gashly.
So,
she's got two vaginas!
So,
God, I would love to have two vaginas as long as I didn't have two uteruses. Because I don't want two periods. Could you imagine bleeding out of your pussy and your stomach? And you're like, oh, it's the cycles haven't synced up.
I can barely handle any punctuation, much less two of them. So, no, I'm out. It's a pass for me, dog.
10 times the drama.
Yeah. So Max then heads to a shipyard and enters an old rusty freighter. He finds a wonderful, beautiful, dirty mattress and then sits down on top of it and basically slipping into full-on madness. He sees a TV appear before him as Nikki appears on that.
I was hoping you'd be back.
I'm here to guide you, Max. I've learned a lot since I last saw you. I've learned that death is not the end. I can help you.
I don't know where I am now. I'm having trouble finding my way around.
That's because you've gone just about as far as you can with the way things are. Videodrome still exists. It's very big, very complex. You've hurt them, but you haven't destroyed them. To do that, you have to go on to the next phase.
What face was that?
Your body has already done a lot of changing. But that's only the beginning. The beginning of the new flesh.
There's still one chip.
A total transformation. Do you think you're ready?
I guess I am.
The next step is suicide!
Yeah, so she says, here, I'll show you how it works. And he looks over at the TV screen and sees him in the same room he's sitting in, getting up and saying, long live the new flesh. And then...
long live the new flesh.
And as he shoots himself on the TV screen, the TV screen explodes and just shoots organs out. Just fucking cow innards everywhere. Pretty decent little practical effect there. But now that he's seen that, he knows now what he must do. He stands up.
The new flesh.
And then shoots himself in the head. Which brings
and
us
then-
to an end.
He's
a Videodrome.
He's completely free of smoking.
Yeah. yes. From the cat's eye. What did we just watch and consume? I'm not really sure. It seems like they tried to make some social commentary about the dangers of TV and how to make a buck off us and how we're all just useless cogs in a wheel. But Ashley, what were your final takeaways from fucking Videodrome?
I have to say, I'm a little disappointed. I feel like if they would have just added another 30 seconds onto the end of the movie, I wish the TV would have picked him up and been like, ready for the prime time, bitch, and done the Freddy Krueger deal. But I was disappointed.
True that.
Yeah.
All right, Jeremy, final thoughts on Videodrome?
I just want to get back to watching puppies strangled and thrown into the river.
Makes sense.
I don't feel this movie made any impact on me whatsoever.
Yeah, you feel completely fine, right? Have you been? Do you think anybody's ever watched Videodrome? Is like, this is my new religion now. This is how I am video in the flesh.
There's only three movies I watch, which is Human Centipede 1, 2, and 3. That's all I watch 24 hours a day. So.
I respect the hustle, the flow, and the game in that. So
I mean, Tom Six is my god now, and I worship him.
Well, there's nothing wrong with loving a Tom Six. Don't get me wrong. So
oh god.
I will say, Jeremy, I'm totally on board with Human Centipede, but I don't want to be attached to the middle is all I'm asking. Just don't.
You are the middle. Long live Dieter Laser, who died, who was actually my Facebook friend. So
yeah, you and Dieter were good buds. That was nice.
But I got to meet two of the centipede, the Asian and the other one. And of course, when I got my picture taken, she's like, you want me to stay here? No, you was the middle one.
classic moment. Ashley, where can people find you at, love?
You can find me on social media at Ashley Pontius Laughs, and you can find me March 11th doing the Save Our Stages campaign at McGoobies.
Yes, you can do all that shit. I'm on that show. I'm very excited to be a part of it. Thanks, Ash, for putting that together. It's for a great cause, so come on out on that date. In February, if my calculations are right, you can come see me and Justin Schlegel on the 13th or the 12th, which is Friday at McGoobies. And then on Saturday, we got two shows for the Valentine's Day murder mystery. Check that shit out. Jeremy, take us out of here.
In my mind and in my car, DVD killed the Videodrome star.